Hello, welcome everyone. This is Judy Neal, and this is the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace teleconference series. And today's date is March 8th, 2012. Our special guest is Peggy O'Neill. And this starts a new teleconference series for us. Last year, we did a series of teleconferences that Tom Anderson hosted that was with people who were keynote speakers or other VIPs from our conference. And this year we're going to start the series out by talking about spiritual coaching and having interviews with people who have spirituality and faith as a focus of their coaching, their work with executives. So we're going to learn more about what is spiritual coaching and learn more about these wonderful people. Our guest today, Peggy O'Neill, is a person who I'll introduce in a minute, but she is going to be leading this series and hosting it after today's call. So this was my opportunity to introduce my friend and colleague Peggy to you. And I want to tell you about Peggy. Peggy is passionate about collaborating with people and a very strong sense of collaboration, and she's really committed to doing business in ways that inspire the human spirit. And she's very focused on results and on producing results that have never been attained before, results that you might not be able to imagine, but she helps you to expand your imagination. She has more than 24 years experience as an executive coach, a business consultant. She's an expert facilitator, has helped a lot of top teams in organizations to get clearer about their business and about their strategy and about the kind of culture that they want. And she's also had 12 years experience as an attorney. She's coached leaders in the United States, in Europe, and in Asia. She worked with Bill Clinton as Assistant Attorney General. She was also, under Bill Clinton, the State Purchasing Director in Arkansas and a member of the Federal Labor Relations Authority in Washington, D.C. She's a graduate of our very own University of Arkansas School of Law and is a certified integral coach and has a number of other kinds of trainings and certifications in coaching and has also certified other people. She is a master coach and a trainer of coaches. So she brings this wonderful background and richness of spirit to this conversation. Peggy, I really want to welcome you and thank you for being my guest.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for such a generous introduction. Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
Wonderful to have you with us, and thank you also for stepping forward and saying that you would be willing to host these kinds of calls in the future. So I'm looking forward to being a participant in those calls.
Oh, good. Well, you're very welcome.
So I'm going to ask you several questions, Peggy, and then we'll open up the conversation so that other people can ask you questions also.
Wonderful.
Okay. You ready?
I'm ready.
Right. So to begin with, I thought it would be helpful for our listeners to learn a little bit about you and why you started coaching. Because you had this background in law, and you've been involved in government, and you've been involved in business leadership. What led you to making the career switch to coaching?
Well, while I was still practicing law, I had access to a coaching course in Arkansas, and I took it, and I loved learning about us as human beings. How do we actually create these results, and how do we get better at living our lives and be more fulfilled? It was really the first access I had to understanding how life works. I was really curious how does this thing called life work. And then I moved into a training work. I started moving into a training profession as I developed my coaching profession and coaching skills, and really moved into coaching two things. So one thing in retrospect, once I moved into the training and then the coaching field more full-time, I realized that the reason I wanted to coach was really the same reason I wanted to practice law. How do we help people get along better together? How do people really live on this planet in a harmonious, peaceful, loving, inspired way? And I saw coaching as a vehicle to actually fulfill reason I got into law. And then the reason I stayed with coaching more than training, although I do some training, is that I really was committed to sustainable results, that whatever people wanted to focus on in their lives, that they were actually able to sustain it. And I found that a lot of times with training, after 2 or 3 days of training or a week of training, people might have learned a lot, but it was pretty hard to sustain any changes or what they saw as possible. So I really, really liked the possibility that coaching offered for that. So that's how I got into coaching.
And what did you – you said you had a course, but, you know, it's a big thing in coaching for most people to be certified in something. I do coaching, and I'm not certified, but you not only are certified, you certify others. So could you talk a little bit about your why you made the decisions you did around the kinds of training that you got?
Well, I took my first coaching course in 1987, and as I said, in Little Rock, through a company called New Ventures West out of San Francisco. And really, that's because for that one, it's because that's the one that was there and my friends were in it. So that's how. However, of course, New Ventures West is of course now known as one of the premier coaching programs. So that was really wonderful that I was able to the one that was in front of me was that one. And over the years, as the coaching profession developed, James Flaherty, that owns New Ventures West, eventually developed his own certification program. So I did take that program after several years before that in just all the programs he offered. So I was in his first certification program in 1995 and was certified through New Ventures West. And over time, I studied coaching a lot, was still involved some with New Ventures West and involved with some other programs, and decided I wanted to certify people as coaches, really because my passion was developing managers, as developing the coaching skills of managers or helping managers really be able to better manage and lead, and saw coaching as a potential skill for those people. So for a while, yes, I did. I had the Academy of Coaching and did for several years certify people as coaching, but decided that I really wanted to focus more on the business world directly and instead of coaches. And then over a few years later, came across Integral Coaching Canada program and decided I really wanted to be certified in that program as well based on the work of Ken Wilber. So I've also been certified in their program. And theirs is a very, it's very intense, but there's a lot of understanding in that coaching program about the integral theory, but not so much the integral theory, but learning so many different ways to listen to human beings, to develop people, to understand ourselves. So I just really appreciated the thoroughness of that program. And then I also have taken some programs from Newfield Institute out of Australia and Newfield Network out of the United States. And
that's known as ontological coaching.
Yes.
Yeah, and so, you know, I know a little bit about these different kinds of coaching, and some of them talk more openly about faith and spirituality as the underpinnings to what they do, and some don't necessarily talk about it, but it tends to be explicit in what they're doing. Can you tell us your view of what the connection is between faith and spirituality and coaching?
Well, all the programs that I have taken do specifically talk about it. So those programs all have that just throughout their programs, as well as the one I led. The way I see coaching and spirituality, the potential for them to really be married is that, just from my perspective, if I'm really supporting someone and living the life they really want to live, and they can feel fulfilled, feel connected with the people that they work with and play with and live with and inspired in their lives, and feel more loving toward other people, then that's spirit at work. That's living a spirited life. For some people, we do actually specifically explore their relationship with God or the relationship with the universe or the divine, however they want to characterize it, and so that we can have deeper discussions along that line. But to me, in general, at least for my coaching, almost everything I do is infused with spirit because it is all about people being able to live their lives. And I feel like when people are, say, stuck in their lives, that's usually why a lot of people or business people or a whole business department maybe or an organization comes to coaching, is because they're stuck in some way. Either they can't make the money they want, or the people aren't getting along the way that they'd really like to, or they aren't attracting as many customers as they would like, or clients. Then there's some element of blocking the spirit, as far as, so that's how I see it, is just they're blocking the spirit. And so as a coach, I work with them. I meet them where they are. So for some people, we don't really directly talk about spirit, but we do talk about flow or energy or how to open the possibility for them to have what they want. And so that, to me, is how coaching and spirit and faith are infused in the process.
Can you give us an example or tell us a story that's working with a specific client? How did this manifest? What's an example of coaching from this faith or spiritual perspective?
Mm-hmm. Right now I'm working, and this client has given me permission to talk about them, although I won't use their name today, but in case you figure out who it is, I do have permission to work with them. To talk about what I do with them. So I'm working with the trust department of a financial institution, and they specifically were stuck. They weren't able to grow their business. And so the way we started talking about it was we did talk about energy and spirit, not necessarily using the word spiritual, but what's the spirit of the workplace and the energy here, and what are we talking about and thinking about and focusing on. And one of the things that I do when I work with clients, depending on the client and the situation, is we can come up with metaphors that help them, so they're images that help them see what's going on, that they are where they are, and then a new image that can help them be inspired to move to another place in their work and how they work together. So as a group, the department has about 10 people in it, we looked at, what's it feel like around here? So the energy and the mood, what do they talk about and focus on? How do they relate to each other? And we came up with an image of a Viking ship. They felt like they're rowing in the Viking ship, their heads down, and they're just pulling all this weight and working really hard, and but not paying much attention to each other, or their heads aren't up. They're really, they're doing a lot of great things because their heads are down. They're getting through the day, but it felt burdensome and onerous. And so as they looked at that and realized they didn't really want to work that way or be that kind of human being, so back to where the spiritual was really present in our discussions and our exploration, we started looking at, well, how do you really want to be together as people? How do you want to be with your clients? How do you want to express your life energy? You're here, you have one life, and you're expressing your life energy here. How do you want to be? And as a group, we came up with an image of them as a jazz band, edgy and sophisticated and creative and having fun and being innovative and on the edge and the kind where people are lining up the door to come experience the jazz band. So that people were inspired, and they are. They're inspired because they want to be that way. So, a lot of times people talk about inspiration that, infused with spirit. So that's where the spirit's really coming alive, and they're allowing the spirit and their inspiration and their appreciation for each other and their respect for each other to grow, and we nurture that. And we've done that through various things. We came up with these images, and then, okay, now how do you get from the Viking ship way of being or feeling and energy to the energy of a jazz band? And so we work with them to develop practices. My coaching is always highly collaborative and mutual in figuring out practices. So what are the actual things that they're going to do with each other, and how do they actually, be able to play this out and live this out as more of a jazz band energy and spirit rather than even one person said, I feel like I have to leave my soul at work every day. So some of that kind of conversation was definitely coming up and present, and the permission to talk that way about their lives and what it was like around there. So a lot of listening and respect and aliveness and passion for each other and people's lives, and So together we came up with practices of how to relate to each other, and we'd practice. So sometimes I do some trainings with groups, and then I come back a month later, and then they practice what we explored and how they agreed and said they wanted to follow through, and then we improve on that and keep going. So that's one example.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So it's a great example.
Oh, good.
I love those metaphors.
Yeah, and they've been great. They love them, too. And it raises
a question for me, because I normally think of coaching as a one-on-one relationship that can be very personal, very intimate, where the coach is really supporting a person in their journey, whatever that might be. And what you've described is a group interaction. And so tell us about how you think about coaching in terms of sometimes it's group work, sometimes it's one-on-one work. How do you decide the way to work, and, you know, do you combine them? What do you do with that?
Yeah, because I also do work with executives or individuals. Right now, even I'm working with a couple of younger people that are just starting out, starting their businesses. But I do also, I've worked with like a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. So it's very similar to what I said about how I'm working with this trust department. Is I work with the client, and together we figure out, is it going to be better if I just work with you, the leader of the group, and sometimes it's not even the leader of the group. You know, anybody can really lead a group. But I say the person with the highest level of consciousness is really the leader of the group anyway. So I've worked
with
people.
Well, that's profound.
Yeah. So I've worked with people at, say, middle management, or somebody who maybe wasn't even in a management position, but they really were committed to something being different in their lives, and then it does infuse the workplace, because they're the ones actually seeing what's going on and having some new capacity to be with people, and it does start permeating throughout their department and then their business. That's happened over all the years. So when I sit down with the person, we see what they want to do. And it's often, you know, sometimes people just really want just the one-on-one work. They don't want to involve the group, maybe because they're wanting the personal relationship and don't want to maybe talk about themselves in front of other people. And so it's real obvious from the get-go, we're just going to work with you. And that's fine. I mean, really, one person, no matter where they are in the organization, can change the organization. And then other times, like this trust department, the leader of that department specifically wanted me to work with the other people. He wanted that kind of support because he saw that what needed to happen with the whole group, he just wasn't skillful at, and he wanted the kind of momentum that it would offer for other people to have some learning and some support and some coaching during the process. So it's you know, often based on just how the person wants to approach it, the person who's making the coaching decision. Lots of times it's budget-oriented. You know, how much money they're willing
to
spend makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and speaking of money, because I've known you and worked with you, having you coach me, I know how results-oriented you are. And could you talk a little bit about your philosophy of results-oriented and accomplishments and measurement? A lot of people use money, but money isn't the only way to measure things.
Yeah. The hesitancy is that, you know, frankly, it depends. I meet people where they are. So with some people, by golly, it is exactly the physical result that they want, and they want to know that they're going to accomplish that, and we do then. Also, besides the other things I'm talking about, the energy, the language is real important to creating results or something different. We also then, if they're that specific on that goal being accomplished during a certain time frame, then we come up with strategies and processes for that to occur and monitor it and make course corrections as appropriate, because, you know, you don't necessarily win every game, so that's definitely built into the system too. What do we do with potential breakdowns, and how do we just keep improving, knowing that we have a specific goal? Some people really realize that really it can be more powerful to focus on the way of being. So like this particular trust department, even though there's a big commitment to substantially increase assets, I'm blessed with a manager who really knows that it's how they are with each other and their energy and their way of being and becoming more of this energy of the jazz band that will produce the results. So on the front end, it was a little slow as far as increasing the business, but now there's incredible momentum with how much business they're increasing because we worked with the foundation first. I can work with people either way. And I love results. I love helping people.
I know. You're very results-oriented.
I love knowing we got there, by golly.
Yeah.
But it really depends on the person. And I explain all this to people. I help them decide what's going to work for them. And sometimes it changes during the course of the process. So we talk about it and decide what's going to be the best way for us to know how things are going and what we want to focus on. And
one of the things you're reminding me of is the paradox that I first learned about in the book Built to Last, that when you're talking about working on the ways of being versus the working on focusing on results. And that book just made such a clear argument that when an organization is focused on its founding values and really sticks to the core values and lives those, particularly in terms of wanting to be of service to the world, which for me is a very spiritual thing, spiritual way of being, that those organizations were much more profitable and had better results on the stock market than organizations that kept focusing on profit and the stock market.
Yes.
It was just kind of this irony. And it sounds like this bank that you're working with gets that. It's a rather sophisticated paradox, but they seem to get that. And now they're, by not focusing so much on profit, you know, right now as soon as we can get it, but rather focusing on who we are, how we are with each other, how we are with our customers, they're ending up getting even more profound results than if they had focused just on the bottom line.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Judy. That if all we had done is that to begin with, it wouldn't be sustainable. That's the other irony of it all. It's the tortoise and the hare. You know, if you've got to have the results right now, it's probably not sustainable because of the foundation isn't there, like you're saying, living by what truly matters to them, and knowing that and listening for that. I mean, a lot of people really don't know what matters to them. They think they do. But it takes some time to listen to ourselves and trust that we know what matters to us and be able to articulate it and share with other people and to build the trust that we really are all on the same page and not just something on a wall somewhere or something we put on a flip chart somewhere. But we all really do believe this and align with this. Yes, you're exactly right. Yeah.
Well, I have one more question for you, and then we're going to open this up. And I realize I didn't do introductions before, so we'll have people check in and tell us who's online with us and where they are.
Great.
And so my last question is, can you tell us about or have you ever had a client, you know, it's like as a coach, one of your goals is to help transform them and help them be more fully who they are. Have you ever had a client that transformed you?
Well, they all do.
Oh, okay.
I know that sounds a little cliche or glib in a way, but it's really true. I mean, a lot of us coaches have joked that we really benefit more than the client does because, you know, every time I'm with a client, I want to be present enough that I'm learning and present and not ahead of them. And so by ahead of them, I mean that I'm so present that I can maybe intuit what we're going to talk about next or where we're going to go next and don't have some pre-planned agenda on a call or a meeting that I'm not really present with what's in front of us. So I just constantly I get to learn. Like this particular client, I'll tell on myself. So there's this same particular client has one person that works there that he and I just didn't get along at the beginning. I mean, I'm a professional, so I can get along in a professional way, but it was very clear to everybody that he didn't appreciate me. Now, I mean, he has his issues within the department, so it wasn't just me. It wasn't personal. He he brings up other issues for other people in the department, but still, as the coach, I was often triggered by his how he would be with me, and so I really, really focused a lot to transform my relationship with him, how I saw him, to experience him differently, and over time, he joked one day that, oh, you mean I win the emotional, the one with the highest emotional development or something like that. So we
made the most progress.
We made progress. But I did too. I mean, it really forced me, and I wanted to really be able to connect with this man in the, you know, I see, to me, every person is a divine being. So I wanted to connect with the divine being he was and is, and not with this personality that was triggering all kinds of things. So that was a real profound experience for me and for both of us.
So do you do any kind of spiritual practice before, during, or after you work with a coach, work with a client?
Yes, I currently am being coached by two people, so I also continue my development. One of them is a spiritual coach, one of them is more of an intuitive teacher, and so I'm always working with another coach, so I'm developing myself. Then as practices, I meditate pretty much every day. I walk 3 to 5 times a week, depending on my schedule, for long periods of time, like 50 minutes, and really focus on my what I'm experiencing about myself. In other words, I'm not planning my day during those walks like I used to many years ago. Not more
multitasking.
Being present for the, yeah. Being
so you practice being present.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And listening to what comes to me and ideas and things. And then before my calls with clients, yes, I do pause and breathe and feel it, that sense of meditation and connection with the universe, and then invite the universe, the divine, to be present with me as I'm with this client or with this group. I guess those are my practices.
Well, that's very inspiring. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So anything else you want to tell us before we open up for questions and answers?
No.
All right.
Good.
All right. So the lines are now open, and I'd like to begin by inviting those of you who'd like to check in to just say your name and where you're located. And if you know Peggy, just you can give her a special hi. So the line is open. Please check in.
I'm Eric Hellman in Toronto. Hello, Judy.
Hi, Eric. Glad to have you with us again. Thank you.
This is Sarah Miller from Fayetteville, Arkansas, and saying hi to Judy and to Peggy.
Hey,
hi, Sarah. And Sarah is also, I didn't mention that we have coaches who are affiliated with the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace, and that is Peggy O'Neill, Sarah Miller, and Barry Goldberg. And we're in the process right now of putting together some coaching offerings for organizations and for executives. And so Sarah is a part of our team on that. So thanks for being on the call, Sarah.
Oh, hi, Judy. This is Amit Singh out here up in New Jersey. How you doing?
Hi, Amit. Thanks for being with us again. You're quite a regular, and I like that.
Hi, it's Sue Garland in Houston.
Hi, Sue. You got back home safely.
We did.
Sue and her husband and her best friend Diane and her husband were recently here in Fayetteville and are planning on moving here. And so they are our coaches with the Cindy Wigglesworth Spiritual Intelligence Process. So thank you for being on the call.
I was born in Houston. So
where are you?
Yeah.
Everybody who was born in Houston no longer lives here. I'm not sure what that's about.
Oh.
Well, hi, everyone. I'm Rosemary Williams. I'm in Fairfield, Connecticut. This is my first time on the call, so it's very interesting to listen and get to know you.
Oh, great.
Rosemary, it's great to have you with us. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Hello, hi, this is Gail Garland in Los Angeles, California.
Hi, Gail. Welcome.
Hi there.
Hello, this is Hanitra, and I'm from Madagascar in France, and I live in San Francisco. And I say hello to you, Peggy and Judy.
Hello.
Hi, Hanitra. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Sam Simon. I'm in McLean, Virginia at the moment, but also work in New York and enjoy working with Judy on a number of projects.
Yeah, Sam is very... Hi, Sam. Welcome. It's great to have you with us. Sam is involved in, for the second year now, in the award selection process for the International Faith and Spirit at Work Leadership Awards, and very involved in helping us with our conference and also at Intersections, where he's working on a number of events, including a conference. So for those of you in the Northeast area, make sure you connect with Sam Simon and Intersections.
Thank you.
Anybody? Hi, this is Nancy Plummer from Stone Ridge, New York. Judy from KCC.
Hi, Nancy. Thank you for calling and joining us. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, nice to be on the call. Thank you.
Anybody else want to check in?
It's Vivian. I'm here.
That's Vivian Hill, everyone who works with the Tyson Center. Yes, someone else? Okay. So thank you for checking in. I know there's a few others on the line as well, and you may have your phones muted or just prefer not to check in, and that's great. And so we just want to invite you now to join Peggy in any questions that you might have or any comments you want to make about things that she said. Many of you are coaches, so if you want to build on things she said and kind of share with us what you're doing, it's just completely open time.
Sure, Peggy. This Judy, this is Amit Singh, and I definitely have a question here.
Yeah.
To Peggy.
Yes.
You know, I appreciate your basically your time here, and very insightful in terms of how you've been building your experience and also interacting with various kind of people, you know, in various domains. You know, I've got a couple of questions. Number one, in your experience, I'm sure now that you look at every interaction and draw, you know, a certain I would say feedback for, you know, about candidates and people you talk with, are, since you've worked in, you know, with different type of peoples and different areas and different kind of you know, roles and responsibilities or different type of professions, how do you establish you know, a program of engagement in terms of looking at people and saying that, okay, you know, this is the way I need to articulate this this type of a program of engagement for this kind of an individual? And I just want to have a broad sense on this. I know this could be, you know, this could be a very involved conversation, but at least from your perspective, since you have been doing this for the last 20 to 30 years, how do you sort of, you know, build a program? That's number one. Maybe from, you know, four modules perspective, saying that, okay, this is how I classify an individual. This is how I map, you know, if you talked about a lot of things about meditation, about about connecting with people. So in that terms, how do you sort of classify the psyche once you meet them, you have interactions with them, you understand their purpose as to what they want to accomplish? And not necessarily, I mean, the outcome of this is not always, the performance, the measure of that is not always, you know, based on the numbers of money or performance. You know, it's also, you know, can be an ongoing process as it always is for some individuals. So, you know, how do you then classify individuals, number one, and how do you associate a purpose with what they want to accomplish? And the most important thing, how do you find action triggers in them so they can then, you know, take action upon what you're trying to sort of work with them and identify with them so they can hurdle out from the situations they are in to the next step or the next purpose in their life.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much for these questions. When I first meet with the client, I ask them why they're talking to me. What are they interested in coaching? And I'm listening for what they're talking about as well as what they're not talking about and how they're talking about it. So as I'm listening to them, I am assessing their language. What are they talking about, not talking about? Again, their mood. So I'm tuning into their mood. And I also pay attention to their body, their physical body, and how that's appearing in relationship to all this and what they say they want. So there's a lot of back and forth during that interaction about what are they looking for. I might even offer, and I do say that, can I offer you what I'm seeing? Can I offer you what I think is that would be useful for you here? Does that interest you? So there's a lot of back and forth during my initial consultations. And then what I do is I go back to my office and I sit with what they said and where they say they want to be, and I think through what are the capabilities or capacities or skills or ways of being do I think they need to get from where they are to where they say they really want to be, and what do I think the best way is to do that. And some of that is based on what I've found out in their first conversation, which is somewhat related to how much money they're willing to pay. Or, you know, I mean, sometimes I don't talk about money in the first conversation at all. I want to wait till I offer a proposal. But I do. I have some sense of what I think they're capable of paying, or willing to pay, or willing to invest. I mean, in fact, this bank that I was referring to specifically asked me, "How much can you do for X amount a month?" And so sometimes it comes across, it's offered that way. And then I tell them, you know, then I come up with a proposal for here's what I think we would focus on, here's how we would work together, whether it be a phone call a week, some in-person meetings, if it's a staff, maybe some half-day or day-long trainings in the process. And then I see how they respond, and then there can be negotiation back and forth about that. Sometimes it changes. So I also let people know up front that this is the way we're starting out, but as we get going, we'll know if we need to adjust any of this along the way. And as far as what specifically gets done, it's usually from interaction from the first – I mean, I do what I said a while ago. I assess at the beginning, here's what I think we're going to be focusing on, but it's also based on what's occurring in the moment in the conversation. So what I thought I might be talking about in the second or third conversation, I may talk about in the first conversation or never even talk about because of where we go. I build from where we are each time. So there's not a preset. So I'm trying to say, not a preset program, but it's really based on the person specifically and what they're up to. And then I'll go ahead and answer the second question and then make sure I'm answering your questions. He said, how do I find the action triggers and associate a purpose and support them in taking next steps? That's also a lot through conversation, either listening if I'm over the phone or in person. I'm watching and I'm listening and I'm feeling, really, are they inspired to take action? And then I ask them, you know, I actually say, so will you do this? Or what do you think about what I'm offering you? How does this feel to you? What are you feeling as I'm talking about it? I'm doing a lot of checking in with if I think they're going to do it or if they think they're going to do it. It's not like a teaching model where I offer an assignment and then hope they do it. I really work with my client as a committed partner, so I'm really listening. Do I hear commitment? Do I hear the emotion, you know, the emotion behind that they're going to take the next step? If not, then I either need to back up and re-enroll them and help them remember why they're doing it, what we're doing, and relate whatever they've been asked to do or what we've talked about doing, relate it to why it's important. And if it's not going to work, then it's my job to come up with something else or for us to figure out another way to approach this if they won't. If I can tell and they can tell, they're not going to do this particular thing that I think might be useful for them. So I really also trust my clients a lot I'm not a. Hopefully, you can tell I'm not a pushover, but I'm also not a browbeater. You know, I'm gonna. You know, it's got to be a mutual thing, and I've got to really feel like they're gonna do it. And if it's just not gonna work, it's not gonna work, and then we find something else that will have a similar support. So, did that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, you know, fairly to some extent. I mean, you know, I just have something as a follow-on, and this might sound something as very dumb, but when you work with people, what I have sort of tend to sort of realize, and certainly it's more applicable to my psyche as well, and this generally, you know, the term really comes to, you know, it's very familiar right now with what's been happening and all that. Do you feel that there is a concept of waterboarding, which has been, you know, a term which has generally been used in interrogations, a waterboarding kind of a technique which you use in your world, which can create, you know, action triggers for people to sort of look into themselves and take actions for the next purpose? You know what I mean?
Well, I think you do. I mean, I do have a bag of tricks, yes. And so if I think that, you know, a highly confrontational interaction will support the client, then if I've tried other things first, I don't do it very often, but sometimes I do will say, you know, I'd like to offer you something, but it might be real uncomfortable for both of us. Can I do that? So I also get permission and kind of let them know, you know, I've got to really lay it out here, you know, this isn't going to work. So let's talk about why this isn't going to work or what we need to do or but it's always with a loving heart, and they know that I love them and appreciate them, and so it's never, I can promise you, it's not, I mean, well, 20 years ago it might have been felt occasionally like waterboarding because I wasn't as skilled as I am now, but today they're not going to feel that. They're going to feel the love, but they might also feel like somebody is saying, you know, reading them the riot act, and that's okay too, but I tell them I'm doing that before I do it, and then I'm real sincere, and then we see what they think. So, yeah, sometimes I do let them know we've got to figure out a way to do this.
Thank you, Peggy. Pleasure talking to you. Appreciate
You're
that.
Welcome. Thanks,
Amit,
for asking the questions. I really appreciate them.
Yeah, thank you. Who else would like to ask a question or make a comment?
Peggy, this is Sarah.
Hey.
And you've had such a diverse training from some of the best of the best. What are the benefits of sort of expanding your training and having the diversity versus, say, a narrow focus and a one philosophy?
Well, in a way, thank you for offering the answer in the question, really. But it is that, you know, that the more I've been able to have different distinctions about people or how to coach people or whole different theories between integral theory and ontological theory and plus the different teachers and just their own ways of being or their own personal experiences, it just adds a richness and a confidence for me. I mean, I happen to be one of those people that I thought I needed a lot of education before I could trust myself real thoroughly. So it also was supportive of me to really trust and have confidence. But it does, you know, it's a learning. So the more distinctions we have as far as how to listen to people or see them or practices, then we just have you know, a bigger world open to us. Every different type of coaching has a different language, just like on the planet, a lot of cultures have different languages, and in each language there's a whole richness and a world that we don't have access to until we learn the language. So the same thing with these various coaching methodologies and approaches. There's a world there that by being in that world, I'm able to access that as I'm with people. And I don't necessarily advocate that people need to go get certified by two programs and take other programs, but that's the possibility that it's offered me, is just to have, I just have different worlds to access.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This is Judy, and I'd like to build on Sarah's question and on something that you said. You said I've learned to make finer and finer distinctions about people. And in what I've studied with ontological coaching, that's actually a very technical term, the word distinctions. It has more meaning than it would have in our everyday language. And I wonder if you could elaborate on that a bit, on what it means for you.
Yeah, so as one of my co-facilitators many years ago, as we were trying to explain distinctions, it's like a plate of spaghetti. You know, for a lot of us, the world's just like a plate of spaghetti. It's just a bunch of pieces of spaghetti on a plate. And making distinctions, we can pull up this one strand of spaghetti and go, oh, that's what's going on. Pull up another strand and go, oh, that's what's going on. So it gives us the ability to start separating things out. So, again, I'll use this banking institution I'm working with. The first time I met with them, within an hour, I could see one of the couple of the biggest reasons why they were stuck. I could listen to their language and what they were talking about. And so that's a distinction, to really listen for the language, what words they use in their phrases, or how they're talking about something. So like they were talking about how they didn't have time for this and that and this and that and the other. So you know, if you don't have time for anything, then you can't grow your business. You can't go make sales calls. So, but they were so immersed in their own conversations with each other, they didn't even see that. They were blind. I use the word blind. They were blind to the distinctions around language. It was like the water they were in. They were the fish in that water, and they had no idea that's what they were even talking about. So I was able to make distinctions with them for them to even start being able to listen to the subject matter they were talking about, and, again, what they weren't talking about, because they weren't talking about sales calls and going to see other people and clients and customers. And so distinctions are just different things at play, if you will. So like for them, language, they hadn't even realized language had anything to do with why they were where they were. So offering language is a reason that they were where they were. Their mood, they had no idea in fact, they didn't even have access to their mood. They didn't realize they were in a mood. They were just all working at work. All bodies going to work and doing their jobs. And so by letting them see this distinction called mood, now they had access to it. Now they could see it, experience it, have a relationship with it. Am I answering your question, or what would you like to add, Judy?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great way to define it.
Okay.
Just to add something to that, the person that I learned some things about distinctions said that the difference between an amateur and a master is the level of finer and finer distinctions that the master can make.
Oh, okay.
So it's about mastery. Mm. And so it sounds like you're teaching your clients mastery.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Other questions or comments people would like to make?
Judy, can I make one more comment, if that's okay by...
Well, it looked like there was someone else first.
Sure.
So if we have some time, we'll love to add you. Go ahead. Was it Gail?
Yes, this is Gail. Uh-huh. The question I have is, you know, I've had some coach training, but I'm really feeling, you know, I've used it more when I've worked with associates in my team and so on. And I really want to go more in depth, and I am kind of, I love to go the education route myself. And so how would you, if you were starting today with what you know, how would you go about selecting a coaching program?
Well, do you have coaches that you respect? Do you know coaches that you respect? I'm always a word of mouth person. That's where that is headed. That if you have other coaches that you respect, I might ask them where did they go to, where did they get their coaching training?
Mm-hmm.
Or where would they suggest that they start researching it? So I'll just name the ones that I'm most familiar with. Again, Integral Coaching Canada, New Ventures West, New Field Network. Sarah went to Hudson Institute, also one of the top coaching programs. So that's my word of mouth offering. That's my commercial for those institutions. You can also go to the International Coach Federation website. I think it's is it coachfederation.org, and they'll have all the schools there listed that are certified by ICF, or they have credentials by, I've forgotten the language, but anyway, they're schools that, that they've said are offering good coaching training. So does that answer your question, or Sarah or Judy, you have another thing to answer? That's where I would start. Now, Judy offers a wonderful training, too. It's not through ICF. It's an Edgewalker, a specific approach, and I think Cindy Wilberforth has some spiritual coaching. So another aspect, again, would be just talking to other, or another approach would be to talk to some other coaches and what are they doing and what kind of coaching, and just to pay attention to what moves you. What are you inspired by, touched by? I'm not necessarily a believer that you need to go to one of these ICF credentialed schools, that it really ought to be a type of program that's inspiring to you and that you're like, you love it and you want to be with people with those approaches. So did that answer you? And then I'll ask Judy and Sarah to chime in. Gail, did that get you what you wanted?
Yeah, that is very helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. And then Judy, Sarah, what would y'all add to that?
What I would add is the coaching programs that Cindy Wigglesworth has on spiritual intelligence is a very well-designed and powerful course. And it's designed not to make someone into a coach. It's a tool for coaches to use with their clients. And they may use many other tools. And my Edgewalker coaching is modeled in a similar way after what Cindy and other people that I admire have done. So I've designed a tool called the Edgewalker Profile that is a way to do some assessment work with a coach and then help them figure out a coachee and help them figure out where they want to go. So I'm not training coaches, but I'm training people in a tool.
Okay.
So that's something. That's another distinction you can make, is that you can learn how to be a coach, and the programs will teach you some of the skills that Peggy's talked about. They'll also teach you the business of coaching and marketing and record keeping and some of the other things about insurance and licensing and other just business-related things that you need to know.
And there are some universities, too, now with coaching.
Yeah, starting to get into
programs.
It, yeah.
But
yeah.
I know the Integral Coaching Canada website and the New Ventures West website both have frequently asked questions, and they answer that question, how to find a coaching school. So even if you're not interested in either of those programs, they can also offer some distinctions, things to be watching for what program. Oh, and then I'd just interview, call them up and talk to people and find out what one resonates with you. And Sarah?
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, I took an approach of going to an ICF conference. And
this is Sarah, everybody.
Oh,
go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead, Sarah.
And just getting a feel of the lay of the land, and it just so happened at that time there were a lot of different schools and offerings there, and it was like a one-shot chance to interview and get a feel for different things. So not that that's necessary, but that's just one approach, too, as well.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
Great. Okay. Amit, you wanted to say something?
Oh, yes. And appreciate all these comments. These are actually very, very insightful in terms of, you know, what Judy just shared and other people just shared too, along with, you know, Peggy's comment. I have a question to Peggy, and this is for everyone actually on the call as well. You know, and the comment is, how do you make, and what do you see, first of all, how do you make, or what do you see from a standpoint of prayer and self-correction? What's your comment on that, Peggy? This is the first question to you, and then, you know, if everybody has a comment on it, please just feel free and express yourself.
Great.
And by, could you define what you mean by prayer? You mean like praying to a higher authority, asking for support?
Well, you know, you just mentioned about something a few minutes ago that we don't have access to tools which other cultures have to offer.
Oh.
Unfortunately, you learn their language. Now, I have an Indian background. I mean, I've I've grown up in the Indian culture.
Uh-huh.
And it's very, it's, off lately I've sort of realized that pragmatically there's some prayers which are very deep in their meaning, and they're written in Sanskrit.
Oh.
And the English interpretations of them are actually very harmonious in the sense that they can bring transformations, you know, within an individual. And I've also, you know, I'm a member of a local interfaith meeting where I live here in New Jersey in the Flemington area. And I've also associated myself with certain Christian traditions and the Sufi traditions and understood, certain prayers. And I see that prayers can really transform if you take a very insightful meaning, you know, from them.
Yeah.
To what, you know, you want to accomplish as a purpose.
Yeah.
So
well,
what's your comment
really
on that?
Really what you're saying is, now that I understand a little more, is how I would answer that, I think, which is it really depends on how meaningful it is for the person, you know, what the person's beliefs are around prayers. And then as far as the person taking their own action, I mean, to me it's like it's like it goes hand in hand that you also, you know, support yourself. So if there are some practices that will support the person in moving forward, like exercising, for example, instead of only praying, I might pray for some health, but also do some things that are going to support me to have a healthier life. So that's, but I think prayer definitely works if people believe it works and they actually are connected with their higher source, or not? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that part, but it's probably going to be more meaningful if they feel the connection to their higher source. You know.
No, I appreciate your comment on this. I mean, you know, I appreciate also the fact that you bring in the health and exercising comment in there as well, because yeah, there definitely is very important, you know, for us to be healthy beings and to be able to take actions on the prayers we call for. So appreciate that.
Yeah, and then I'm also a big believer in inspired action, which leads to your first question, which is, so it's not about forced action. It's not about making myself do something, but as a coach or a person working with the client, how do I free the help the person be freed up to want to take action? So that it's not forced, otherwise it won't last. So how do I help them be freed up and take action? Okay, great.
This is Sarah, and I would like to respond to that question, if I may.
Yes, go ahead.
I work with physicians who are labeled as disruptive, and a lot of them are just dispirited or working in a very difficult environment. And what I do is, in part, try to reconnect them to their calling. And this weekend we had a physician come in, and it was an intensive coaching session. But prior to his arrival, my business partner, who's a Tibetan Buddhist monk, and I did, he did the chantings in Tibet. I had no idea what he was saying, but you know, I participated in that. We chanted for his success and openness and so forth, and we never really brought it up, but he certainly was, he stayed at the Tibetan monk's home, and he certainly was surrounded by spiritual things, and we never ever asked him to meditate or anything. But by the end of the time, you could tell his spirit had returned, his smile, his calling, his reason for being in the profession. And then he flew his own plane in, and as Geshe and I took him to the airport, the wind was rather high, and we just used another opportunity to show our prayer, but we said, we'll be saying chantings for you as you take off. But
that's
it's very powerful, even if you do it for your own self, you know, as a coach.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that, and thank you, everyone. Peggy, I'm going to give you a chance in a moment to make final comments, but it's time to end our call. And I just want to make a couple of announcements. We, at the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace, we have a program coming up at the end of this month led by Mel Toomey, who also has a company that does a lot of executive coaching and organizational change programs. And he's doing a year-long program at the university on integrating change. It's open to the public, and there are two-day workshops that happen every 2 months. And we're actually doing two of them back-to-back right now. We're doing the ending of one session and the beginning of another. And so if anybody's interested in coming to participate in that, there's information on our website. We keep the cost very low, and we hope that, we know it's been very meaningful and transformational for the leaders of companies who've attended that. And we will be continuing this teleconference series, and Peggy will be the host of the next one. We don't have a date yet, but we will send that out in the newsletter. I'm assuming that everyone on this call learned about it from the Faith and Spirit at Work newsletter, but if you did not, if you learned about it from a friend and you want to get the newsletter, then email me. You can email me at jneal, J-N-E-A-L, at Walton, W-A-L-T-O-N, .uark.edu, and I can put you on the newsletter. Peggy, how does someone get a hold of you if they're interested in working with you or following up in conversation?
Yes, I'm, of course, always happy to explore with people coaching and their lives, but just to support anybody with regard to anything I've said today or any other questions they might have about coaching, yes, I love talking with people. They can reach me at Peggy, P-E-G-G-Y, at Peggy O'Neill, O-N-E-A-L, coaching.com. Peggy at PeggyO'NeillCoaching.com, and just send me an email and with a phone number or whatever, we can schedule a time to talk, and we'd welcome that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for being my guest, Peggy. It's been wonderful learning more about you and your work and your philosophy and your stories, and we look forward to having you host these conversations in the future.
You're welcome, and I'm looking forward to it, too.
Any closing words of wisdom to the people on the call?
What I offer is that we all appreciate and acknowledge that we're all here to expand spirit. I mean, that's what I really felt on this call, is the curiosity to and the commitment to sharing our lives and our experiences, and some people ask questions, but it's expanding our ability to be who we can be in the world and in the universe and serving other people. And I just ask that we all acknowledge and appreciate ourselves for sharing in this expansion today.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.